Chapter 8. My Return to England by Walter Hartwright. Laura Fairley had filled my thoughts when the ship took me away to Honduras, and she filled my thoughts when I came back to England in the autumn of 1850. I went straight to see my mother and sister as soon as I returned. It was wonderful to see them, but that happiness was soon ruined when they told me the awful news that Laura had died. I was shocked and heartbroken. A few days later, I decided that I wanted to see the grave for myself, and I travelled to Limeridge. I was very upset when I saw the white cross at the Fairley grave with Laura's name now on it. I sat by the grave for some time, full of terrible sadness and regrets. As the sun was sinking in the sky, I heard footsteps. I looked up, and there in front of me I saw Marion. She looked shocked to see me. Another woman standing behind her cried out and then started to walk forward. She came closer and then stopped in front of me. I could not move. I was looking at the face of Laura, of Lady Glyde. My life suddenly changed again in that moment. Now there were totally new hopes, fears, and needs. We went straight to London, and I found a small, cheap apartment for the three of us to live in. I gave the landlord a false name and told him that Marion and Laura were my sisters. I made a little money by selling my drawings, and Marion cooked, cleaned, and did all she could to look after Laura. But I am afraid to say that Laura really was not well. Her mental health was very poor, and she did not remember most of what had happened in recent months. She was very thin and depressed, and was easily upset. But I still loved her, and I wanted to protect her and her sister. I will now tell you Marion's story as she then told it to me. Several days after Mrs. Mickelson had taken over at Blackwater, a letter arrived announcing Lady Glyde's sudden death at Count Fosco's house. No dates were mentioned in the letter. When she was well enough to travel, which was about 3 weeks later, Marion went to London with Mrs. Mickelson. Marion returned to Limeridge House and collected all the information she could find there. Mr. Fairley had heard about his niece's death in a letter sent to him by his sister, Madame Fosco, and her husband, Count Fosco. The first part of the letter described the details of Lady Glyde's illness and death, but again, no dates were mentioned. The second part of the letter was about Anne Catherick. It said that she had been found and returned to the asylum. It also explained that her mental illness was now much worse. She was now very confused, and, for some strange reason, she now believed that she was herself Lady Glyde, Percival's dead wife. "Perhaps the idea had come to her when she had met Lady Glyde at Blackwater," said Madame Fosco. "She must have seen that the two women looked very similar. Had she decided to use that fact to upset Sir Percival Glyde?" Madame Fosco wanted Mr. Fairley to know about this, in case Anne Catherick ever tried to talk to him or other relatives to make them believe that she was actually Lady Glyde. Mr. Fairley said that Count Fosco had travelled with the coffin to Cumberland. He stayed at Limeridge House and went to the funeral, which took place on the 30th of July. He arranged for the new name to be added to the gravestone straight away. In the meantime, Sir Percival Glyde had immediately left the country and had gone to live in Paris. He did not attend his wife's funeral. Although she had not discovered anything very important or new, Marion could not rest. She decided to visit the asylum where she believed that Anne Catherick was being kept. There were many unanswered questions about this mysterious woman. so Marion went to the asylum on the 12th of October. The owner of the asylum told her that Anne had been returned there by Count Fosco on the 27th of July. He admitted that she seemed different. Her experiences in the free world must have changed her both mentally and physically, he said. A nurse took Marion to see the patient. Raising her head and noticing someone approaching, the woman stood up. Then she started to run forwards. It was at that moment that Marion recognised the young woman. It was actually her sister, the sister who she had thought was dead. Marion wasted no time. She calmed Laura as fast as she could. Then she whispered to her, "My dear sister, keep quiet. I will find a way to get you out of here." Marion knew that it would be impossible to persuade anyone that this woman really was Lady Glyde. She decided that the only way to save Laura was to help her to escape from the asylum. The next day, she took all the money she had in the world and returned to see the nurse. She explained that the patient was a relative of hers and that she had been wrongly placed in the asylum after a mistake. As she held £400 in her hand, she quietly said, "Bring her safely to me outside the asylum early tomorrow morning, and this money will be yours." The nurse agreed to the plan, and that was how Marion rescued her sister. Laura was weak and very upset, but once she was out of the asylum, she told Marion her story as best she could. I will record the details here. Laura explained that she had travelled from Blackwater to London by train, but that she could not remember the exact date. As expected, the Count met her as she got off the train and told her that they were going to see Marion. Laura then became very worried and upset and asked for a glass of water. The water that Count Fosco gave her tasted very odd and made her feel ill. Soon afterwards, she fainted. The next thing she knew was that she woke up in a big room with lots of women around her. The asylum. Everyone there called her Anne Catherick, and even the clothes she was wearing had the name Anne Catherick written on them. From that day, the 27th of July, to the day that Marion rescued her, she was treated as though she was mentally ill. It was extremely upsetting for her. After hearing the story, Marion immediately took Laura by train to Limeridge. She told Mr. Fairley what had happened, but shockingly, he rejected his niece. He said he did not recognise her and that this stranger must leave immediately. He said that he had been warned in his sister's letter that this may happen, that Anne Catherick would try to trick him. Of course, Laura was much thinner and looked ill and very different, and it did not help that she was so anxious and her memory so damaged. Marion decided that she and Laura should return to London, where they could more easily hide. On their way to the station, Laura begged her sister to let her see her mother's grave before leaving. And so they walked quietly to the churchyard, and by that simple act, they changed the future of our three lives forever. So that was the story of the past, as far as we knew it then. It seemed clear to me what had taken place. The fact that the woman in white and Laura looked so similar had been used to commit a terrible crime. Anne Catherick must have been taken to Count Fosco's house and introduced as Lady Glyde. And Lady Glyde had been taken to the asylum and had been given Anne Catherick's identity. The reason for this awful crime was also very clear. Count Fosco and Percival Glyde both needed large amounts of money. With Lady Glyde officially dead, Percival Glyde would inherit £20,000. Count Fosco, through his wife Eleanor Fosco, would gain £10,000 as well. However, now that Laura had escaped from the asylum, the success of their plan was threatened. I felt sure that they would do anything to make sure they got the money. As a result, Laura and Marion and I were in serious danger. Laura, Lady Glyde, was, in the eyes of the law and of anyone important, dead and buried at Limeridge. And everyone now believed that Laura was Anne Catherick, a woman who had escaped from an asylum. Thin, tired and changed, Laura looked more like the woman in white than ever before. And Marion and I would now be seen as criminals for helping Anne Catherick and hiding her from the police. We needed clear proof that Laura was Lady Glyde and not Anne Catherick. But how could I get that proof? I decided to collect as much information as I possibly could. I started by asking Marion to read out the parts of her diary that described events at Blackwater Park, and I noted down every important paragraph. Next, I went to see Dr. Goodrick in St. John's Wood. I said that I had been sent by Miss Halcombe to collect more details about her sister's illness. He gave me a copy of the death certificate and wrote down Jane Gould's address. When I visited Jane Gould, she also told me how to contact Hester Pinhorn, the servant who had been working for Count Fosco at the time. In this way, I collected statements from Dr. Goodrick, Jane Gould, and Hester Pinhorn, exactly as they are shown in these pages. Marion then wrote to Eliza Mickelson to ask her for a statement. With this information, I felt ready to meet Marion and Laura's solicitor, Mr. Curl. "I should be back in a few hours," I told Marion, "but if anything happens and I don't return tonight..." "But what could happen?" Marion said nervously. "Well, I'm sure that Sir Percival Glyde was paying someone to follow me before I went to Honduras. Now that Laura has escaped from the asylum, he may suspect that I am involved. But don't worry, I will be very careful. If I have any suspicions that I am being followed, I won't return to this house today. I will wait until it is safe." Mr. Curl was a pale, thin, quiet man who listened very carefully when I spoke. I told him the whole story, which took a long time. "What do you think, Mr. Curl?" I asked when I had finished. "Do we have a chance of proving who Laura really is?"
"I believe what you say, but as a lawyer, I must tell you, Mr. Hartwright, that you have no definite proof at all. Look at the evidence of Lady Glyde's death. Madame Fosco is a witness to Lady Glyde's arrival in London and her illness. There was a doctor who witnessed her illness, and there is an official death certificate with Lady Glyde's name on it. There was a funeral at Limeridge, and a statement of death has been added to the gravestone. What evidence is there to prove that Lady Glyde is who she says she is? There is none. Did Miss Halcombe tell the owner of the asylum or the police that there had been a mistake and ask for her sister to be freed? No, she did not. She secretly paid a nurse to allow her sister to escape instead. Did Lady Glyde's own uncle recognise her? No, he did not. Can Lady Glyde herself give detailed information about her past that proves who she is? No, she cannot. Could we dig up the body and show that the person in the grave looks completely different to Lady Glyde? No, we could not. I'm sorry, but you cannot possibly win in a court of law."
"What if I found more evidence?" I asked anxiously. If you are right about Count Fosco and Sir Percival Glyde, then they won't make it easy for you to get that evidence. They would have planned the crime carefully and would fight you with everything they have.
There was silence for a moment before he spoke again.
The only other proof would be dates that do not match. If you could prove that the date of the doctor's certificate and the date of Lady Glyde's journey to London were very different, or that she was in another place, then it would be a totally different situation.
I thought about it. No one had yet been able to tell us the date of Lady Glyde's journey to London, not the housekeeper, not Laura herself, and not Marion.
I am determined to prove Laura's identity, and I will find a way, I told him.
As I was leaving Mr. Curl's office, I noticed how stupid I had been. Sir Percival Glyde knew that Mr. Curl was Miss Halcombe and Lady Glyde's family solicitor. The lawyer's office would be the first place he would watch. I was careful as I left. I walked down a long, straight street, and after a while I stopped and turned around very suddenly. I saw that two men had also stopped behind me, and they were now talking to each other. I recognised one of them. He was the same man who had followed me before I went to Honduras. I was furious. I jumped into a carriage and told the driver to hurry away. As I looked behind me, I saw the two men running, but there were no other carriages for them to catch. I was safe for now. Many hours later, I returned to the house. I told Marion about what had happened. Having thought about what to do, I told Marion that I would travel to Blackwater Park the next morning. I have to find out the date of Laura's journey to London, I said. We know that she was taken into the asylum on the 27th of July, but I don't think Count Fosco could have hidden her in London for more than a day. What if she travelled to London on the 26th, the day after the death certificate says that she died? Perhaps Dr. Dawson will know something. If not, I will force the truth out of the two people who certainly know it, Count Fosco and Sir Percival Glyde, I said angrily.
But how? Marion said.
Don't forget, Marion, about the baronet's secret. You heard him say that if people knew about it, then he would be completely ruined. If everything else fails, then I will find out what that secret is.